Among its services, it can formulate zinc powders based on special orders from customers. It also provides its customers flexible delivery, whether by sea, air, or ground. This producer has never stopped looking to the future. It plans to increase its current market share and create new products that can be used in other down-the-line industries. This company has achieved many successes despite being relatively recently established. But that's not to say it has not faced many challenges along the way. One such challenge has been maintaining its machines, which sometimes require spare parts for repairs. Well, I'm going to go into a several minute silence because my good friend and colleague is out there on the field to give you guys a wonderful report. Take it away.
In a world grappling with coronavirus, a significant number of health-related companies have been looking for a solution to contain the spread of the virus. With the development of various testing methods, there has been a huge spike in demand for the virus sampling kits, and especially the sampling swabs.
God, I'm just so very tired of wearing masks. But what can I say? Ever since the pandemic took the world by storm, our life has changed in an unpredictable way. One of the prominent changes is the development of sampling technology to meet the evolving need of COVID-19 testing. Today, we came to Damahi Biotechnology Company to see how the sampling swabs that we see everywhere are produced. So don't go anywhere. Stay with me.
At the start of the outbreak, most of the sampling swabs were imported into the country and the domestic supply chain had been inconsistent. For this reason, this Iranian company in biotechnology decided to take steps towards promoting local sampling swabs on a large scale. When it comes to production, the swabs are produced in two different forms: oral swabs and nasal swabs. Anyway, let's take a look at the production line.
Alright, the production process of the sampling swabs begins in this unit. At this stage, after the plastic handles are imported into this factory, they go through the swab flocking machine to form the header. Actually, when I look at it, it kind of looks like the ear cleaning swabs that we use on a day-to-day basis. But in fact, they are completely different. These headers are actually made of fibers, so it's totally something else. When the swabs are produced, they get to this stage for quality control and cleaning before they get to the packing hall. And finally, they pass through the sealer machine for pressing. But I should mention that the swabs are not finalized at this stage. They have to go through the sterilization process, and by the end of the day, the sterilized swabs are transported to different laboratories all across the country.
In case you wonder about the head of the swab, unlike how we thought earlier that it looks like the ear cleaning swab, the foam-headed material eliminates the possibility of adhesive residue contamination. So by the end, the sterilized sampling swabs are distributed for field or home testing to meet the growing need of the country.
Even though it looks very simple, the production procedure of the sampling swabs is very complicated. Now, thanks to the development of such diagnostic tools, the world has managed to curb the pandemic in numerous ways. I've been Sarah Adema. Stay safe and bye-bye.
Many thanks for that fantastic adventure. That wraps up our program for today. Thank you so much for tuning in. I have been Samson Sees. Sees you in the next bazaar.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are...
A Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Ladies' Favorite Program, Muslim Lady. Well, once more, I'm here as your host. I'm Asma, at your service. And today, we have Brother Mustafa with us as the guest. Assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome.
Walaikum assalam. Thank you for having me. Yes, I'm Mustafa, and I'm also a student here. I am researching psychology and Islamic studies here.
So that's very great. Thank you for being here. So one of the features of a mother is to be patient. So there are many girls who are not having some special traits before they become mothers, before they become a wife, before they become a partner of another person in a communion, in a respectful communion that is called family. And now one of those traits is patience, which is very much important. Not many girls have that, but then as they become mother, when you see them, when you look at their life in retrospect, you see how much of change they have been through after they have become mothers. Like you see that girl who was so impatient and who was so reckless, now she's more logical, she's more patient. And the thing that how she has been through that much of change and how she started to gain that much of patience is very interesting.
Definitely. Of course, you know, having children or being in that role completely changes a person's life, like way of thinking and lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
I mean, even the Holy Quran mentions how difficult it is for a mother to sort of, you know, raise that child, to wean them. And for that, God has given them like this sort of incredible position, you know, in the hereafter, just for, you know, bringing a child into this world.
Yeah.
So, of course, that would definitely make them patient. And I was trying to think of, you know, how I can sort of make this a more practical or maybe more interesting for listeners. You know, one idea that came to my mind is that what are some practical things that patients can help with, right? Where can patients sort of help you sort of not make mistakes? And one of the things like we learn about in psychology is that we try to use different techniques to change sort of human behavior, right?
Yeah.
There's a whole topic called like modification behavior. And let's say if you go to a psychologist and you say, hey, you know, my son or my child is having this issue, they will tell you, okay, like, why don't you apply this technique? What happens, unfortunately, when we don't know those techniques, what do we run out of, do you think? We run out of patience.
Of course.
Maybe we run out of patience. When we run out of patience, what do you think happens next? If you do have a sister or a child, right? And they were to sort of misbehave, right? Let's say they come home, they're less than 7 years old, and they come home and they're misbehaving. Let's say they're picking their nose, they're swearing.
Yeah.
What do you think should be the reaction of a parent? What do you think should be done there?
I have a younger brother who once was a little child. So as for me, I'm going to tolerate for one time, twice, and three times, but then eventually I'm going to explode.
Okay, so that's exactly why we're saying patience, it comes in handy here, right? Islam, and from a psychological point of view, they would say that the initial reaction is to completely ignore that child's behavior.
Yeah.
So completely ignore what they're doing as if they have done nothing. Right? A lot of times what happens is when a child comes in doing those things, parents will start like disciplining that child,
yeah,
right?
Now I have a question.
Yeah.
Since you have children, do you think men are more patient or women?
Absolutely, men are not as patient as women. There's like no comparison.
Okay? Yeah, that's the thing. Ladies are more patient.
100%. Like women have so much more patience, especially when it comes to children. Mm-hmm. And I think God's placed that in
exactly.
In
I
them.
Just wanted to mention this. God has put this into her nature because she's going to be a mother, and a mother always tolerates everything.
In fact, I'm sure we have narrations which say something like, you know, a woman has like three times more patience than a man. You know, she has 10 times more patience than.
Yeah.
So there are some things that are related to her nature.
Definitely.
Like and being a mother, like having too much of patience, like being the supportive one.
So that nature, it comes out even more when they're in that role, right? When finally, when they're in that role of a mother, then that sort of enhances their inner sort of, it develops their patience.
In but
that's what I'm saying. Patience is such a huge tool in just in terms of parenting that it's used in psychology as a way of like changing, you know, children's behavior. One of the things that you said, you know, you asked as a father. Now, some of the things, by the way, that we're talking about, they're not just related to women. They're related to everyone, right? They're related, even as a father, you have to do these things. It's not as if...
So, but since we're talking to Muslim ladies,
I know.
We want to honor them more and
of course. But I'm trying to say it's important for everyone.
Yeah.
So another thing that we talk about in psychology from this angle, you know, from being patient, is that a mother, for example, they say should be a mountain of love for their children, right? In the sense that there's these red lines at home that you should have that should never be crossed. And that's like love and respect.
Exactly. Okay? Yeah.
By the way, these are things that I didn't know. You know, these things that I'm mentioning are things that I've actually learned when I was here and studying. Mm-hmm. You might think for some people, these things might be like normal or common sense.
Yeah.
But I actually had to learn them.
So let me just test your patience and tell you that it's time for break and we have to go for a short break and then we'll be back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So welcome back, Muslim ladies. We are talking about patience and how we develop that trait in ourselves as mothers. Considering the mothers related to these children, we would say that these children are going to be the tools that are going to teach them how to develop many good traits, one of them being patience. So it has got so much of difficulties to raise up a child, to bring up a child, to tolerate all the difficulties that might occur in the process. But then it's a way of getting more developed, of flourishing more of your human self.
Definitely. You know, the way we sort of sometimes view marriage and having children, I don't think it's always the correct view. For example, our teacher was telling us that, you know, sometimes we see marriage as just a means of like sort of as fulfilling our physical needs. I think this is a wrong sort of idea given to people about marriage, right? Similarly with children, I would say, like the whole point of marriage and children is self-development and growth.
Exactly.
There's no, like you cannot have self-growth anywhere else like as you can with children or as being in that role of a mother.
Yeah.
Right? You're dealing, like you're raising another human being. Unfortunately, there's in some Western countries, you know, you may even hear some really extreme cases where moms have killed their children.
That's unbelievable.
And it is unbelievable. But, you know, it's they're living really difficult lives there, right?
Yeah.
Even in our society, I would say a lot of women are living difficult lives. And unfortunately, I would say even for someone, we see that even someone who doesn't have problems, who's not working sometimes, our moms may not go to the extreme of killing their children, I would say. But due to lack of patience, they may solve the problem in the wrong way. For example, they may just give their phone to their child and say, hey, here you go. Just play video games. Right here. Just go look at YouTube videos or whatever. Just go look at cartoons. That's what a lot of us do, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just leaving your child to the video or, you know, the TV, it's definitely not good for them. That shows your lack of patience then.
Exactly.
And that's, unfortunately, I can tell you, it may cause even more harm to the child in the long run and to your family.
Of course, yes. And they are not going to learn about the good features of a human being, like being so protective of each other, like devoting time for each other, talking to each other, sharing some emotion with each other. If a mother does not do that to her child, then that child, where is she or he going to learn that?
Right. They're going to be learning that from like all the wrong places then, right? They're learning that from cartoons and they're learning that from that movies. And, you know, it's even more serious than that. I don't know how many people realize how many children today have mental illnesses, right? Children starting from the age of 7, 8, 9, like 10, like psychologists are having parents come in with these children at that young age. Why is that happening? A lot of it has to do with, for example, just the phone and just the internet.
Yeah, and with their childhood, because this this trick to give them the phone or anything else to make them engaged in it happens when they're so much of a child, like at the age of 7 or even before that. And right this time, right from the year 1 to year 7 of their mental development, all the basics are going to happen.
And, you know, don't think that a 7 or 8-year-old will not search for like the wrong things.
Yeah.
They do search for the wrong things because they've learned it from some older friend or, you know. So we're seeing that, you know, if so a woman's patience is so important, you know, that yes, it develops through the child. And if it's not developed in the proper way, it can cause serious harm then to the child and to the family.
So again, we come back to the point where we said before you bring up a child, you have to go through too much of knowledge and education. You have to educate yourself. And then when you become a wife, when you become in the process of becoming a mother, then you have to learn to have patience and you have to learn to devote time for this child of yours, because it is going to be a means for your development as well.
Yeah, and you know, a friend of mine used to say that having children is like is one of those things where you have children, you're given a child without a manual, right?
Yeah.
You're not given a manual, for example, although I would disagree with him in the sense that today's studies and today's, you know, for example, books related to parenting, you do have manuals available to you. And we should, I didn't do this myself, right? I wish I had, and whoever's listening, if you haven't had kids, go out there and read those books. They're really helpful. You may be making mistakes that you don't know. Go and read those psychology books. Go and like listen to those lectures. They will pay off.
Exactly. There are too much of lectures and there are too much of documentaries in that. I guess all of them could come handy and so fruitful.
Yeah. One final thing I would say related to this topic, you know, is that not all psychologists or not all therapists are in the sense good or reliable. And what I mean by that is that if you find a psychologist who only has a Western way of thinking, then they may end up like giving you the wrong advice.
Yeah.
Because they may end up giving you drugs that you don't need, right? So whoever you're seeking advice from, definitely make sure that, you know, they're following Islamic principles. They know, you know,
they respect human soul as well as their
they respect
just
the
mental
human soul
needs.
Because I've heard, unfortunately, I've heard horror stories where, you know, people have gone to like certain psychologists and then they've just told them to do like haram things, mm-hmm. you know, forbidden things.
Yeah.
Because that's normal in Western psychology to do those things. But for us, that's definitely not normal.
And there was another aspect to our topic that we were talking right today, which was where does woman feels like devastated and worn out not to have that much of patience is to have too much of roles to do, too much of things to do. I guess sometimes it's good to just think about what we are doing to our own selves. What are we doing? Is it really worthy to do all of these things and then forget about the most important part of my life, which is my family and my children? We should look back on that aspect as well.
And you know, as a man, I would say that even men need to understand like the role of a mother or of a woman. You know, what are the needs? What should be done? Because it's not just a one-sided, it's not just like the woman has to do everything here, right?
Yeah.
It's a two-sided sort of relationship here. And both parties need to understand each other and their needs. If they don't, that's where there will be conflict. That's where there will be problems. So even as
and
a
they
man,
have to cooperate.
Yeah. They have to cooperate. There's so much going on here. And in that sense, then the Quran says, if you do those things, then the Quran says that, you know, then a husband and wife become a source of peace for each other. On the other hand, the Quran says that your spouse and your child could become fitna or a trial for you,
yeah.
right? They're all like tests and trials for us. we succeed in them, then we'll have a good life, right?
Yeah, that's the gist, I suppose. So just try to think about what you're doing and then prioritize. I think that would make everything pretty much clear for you. So this was all. Thank you for being with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Welcome to IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Mafatih al-Hayat, The Keys of Life. And this is your host, Sayyid Mustafa. For the past few episodes, we've been discussing probably one of the most important topics we have in terms of, you know, social interactions that we have among ourselves. And that is the rights of our brothers and sisters in faith. Those people that share the same values, those people that share the same ideals and goals as us. Islam has placed great emphasis on this, and we reached a point where we're discussing what are some of the practical things that we can do in society. And one of the things we discussed was helping feed, you know, people in society. Islam has placed great emphasis on helping others and helping in terms of, you know, providing them food, feeding the poor, whatever you can do in terms of, you know, material help. So there were three categories, and the first was material help. And under material help, we talked about feeding. There's a section in this book that which also talks about actually not just feeding them food, but also fulfilling someone's thirst, right? So giving out water, for example, has been talked about as something that you can do. Apart from giving water, we can also provide clothes for people. A lot of times we'll see, you know, people have old clothes that they're throwing away. We've been told, you know, you don't necessarily need to do that. You can help someone who doesn't have clothes. People also need shelter, so providing home, a place to stay, has been greatly emphasized. And also, you know, helping them with any sort of needs that they have. One thing which I found to be pretty interesting, one act which has greatly been encouraged, is to give gifts to each other. Right, it's something that we maybe don't do as much, but I thought it was a great suggestion to give gifts to your brothers, to give gifts to people that you know, your neighbors. In the hadith, it says that when you give gifts, it removes any grudges, any negativity that someone may have in their heart towards you. So that's also why it's important to be giving gifts. On the flip side, we're also told we should be accepting gifts, right? It's not just about giving them, that when somebody gives you a gift, you should accept them. However, one thing that has to be clarified is that these gifts, we are talking about accepting them from believers. We've actually been told in certain narrations that if you're being given a gift, let's say by your enemy, by disbelievers of Islam, by those that are polytheists, then you should not accept gifts from them. And that, I think, also makes sense. because, you know, they'll be trying to take advantage of you. Your enemy will try to take advantage of you by giving you gifts, for example. So this actually, this whole story sort of helping others, you know, in need kind of reminded me of a story that of my own life, right? And we will continue discussing that right after we come back from the break.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
So we're back, and we've been discussing what are some ways we can meet other people's sort of material needs. We've talked about, you know, giving them food, clothing them, giving them shelter, providing even water in society. However, we can really broaden this idea of helping others, right? It could be, for example, helping educate someone. It could be in terms of helping someone get married, right? And that's actually the story that I really want to talk about, is my own story of how I actually ended up getting married. I think it will kind of really help demonstrate, you know, how others can come to your aid and how they can come and help you out. So this is kind of a long time ago, almost about 12 to 13 years ago. I was single at that time, and I decided to go for Hajj, right? I had enough sort of financial abilities. I had the time, and I decided to go for Hajj. And Hajj, for anyone who doesn't know, it's the annual pilgrimage that Muslims go to Mecca every year to perform. And one of the, I think, ironic part of this, you know, the ironic part of the story is that my parents were telling me that, hey, don't go for Hajj right now. And once you get married, you should go with your wife, right? Because you sometimes, it's the type of deed that you only do once in your life, and you want to possibly do it with your wife. I was like, look, I have to go. You know, it's become wajib on me. It's become compulsory. What will I say to God if I die? You know, why didn't I do it? It's because I was waiting to get married, right? So my parents understood that, and they allowed me to go. And while I was there at Hajj, I became friends with a couple, right? You normally go in groups, so I became friends with a couple. And before I really mention, you know, what happened with this couple, one thing that happened is that I was actually doing tawaf of the Kaaba. You know, I was just going around doing the circles that you have to do of the Kaaba. And after completing it, when I sat down to pray, next to me was a scholar from Qom. And we just started talking. I just started introducing myself. I asked about him. He asked about me. We met one more time in the Holy Kaaba. And he started asking me about my marriage plans. And I told him, look, yes, I do want to get married. I'm trying to find someone. He said, you know what you should do? You should do 2 rakat prayers. And you should give these 2 rakat prayers to Hazrat Ma'asume, who's buried in Qom, the 8th Imam's sister, in the city that I'm sitting in right now. And he said, also, you should read Surah Yasin. And I did these 2 things right there and then. And he said, then you should pray for a good wife. And I can tell you the very next day, within 24 hours, this couple that I had met, I sat down with dinner with them, and they started asking me about my marriage plans. And right in that conversation, the person said, well, the guy that was there, he said to his wife, you know who would be great for Mustafa, who would be a great match for Mustafa? It's your best friend. And he named my wife. Right? So this couple played this incredibly critical role in helping introduce me and my wife. And I would say I felt as if my prayers during Hajj were also answered. This couple, I'm indebted to them till this day for introducing, you know, me, my wife. It's not something easy, I would say, to introduce a stranger to another stranger and go through that process, because it doesn't always work out. A lot of people don't want to put themselves in such a position. But these people did, right? And that resulted in something that was really amazing. And I should go ahead and add that before our marriage, my wife had also come to this holy city of Qom, and she had prayed here in the Haram to Bibi, to Hazrat Ma'asume, that she would like to come and live in Qom one day, right? And her prayer, I would say, was also answered as well. So these things are important. They don't just have a material effect. They have a spiritual effect. They have a spiritual effect on our lives. They can change the course of our entire life. So that's all the time we have for today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
There Was the Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time.
The Israeli regime's drone attack has killed an Al Jazeera cameraman and injured the network's bureau chief in the Gaza Strip. Reports say Al Jazeera cameraman Samer Abu Daqa was left to bleed to death for hours. The Zionist regime's killing of Samer Abu Daqa is the latest in its deliberate and systematic attacks on Palestinian journalists and their families. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The website Electronic Intifada has covered this story and tells us more. The Israeli regime's drone attack has killed an Al Jazeera cameraman and injured the network's bureau chief in the Gaza Strip. The Israelis fired the missile that injured Wael al-Dahdou and cameraman Samer Abu Daqa after they were dispatched to the Farhana school amidst calls for rescue from injured and besieged Palestinians trapped there. While al-Dahdou managed to reach paramedics on foot, Abu Daqa's injuries prevented him from doing so. The Israeli regime obstructed ambulances from reaching him as he lay on the ground for hours, bleeding to death. The Zionist regime's killing of Samer Abu Daqa is the latest in its apparently deliberate and systematic attacks on Palestinian journalists and their families. With Abu Daqa's death, the number of journalists and media workers killed during Israel's genocidal war on Gaza has exceeded 90. Speaking from his hospital bed, Wael al-Dahdou explained that he and Abu Daqa had been covering the evacuation of a Palestinian family from the school alongside an ambulance with prior coordination. We reached certain locations that no camera lens had reached since the ground invasion. Even civil defense and ambulances had not reached those places, he said. After concluding his reporting, while al-Dahdoor was walking over a distance of several dozen meters, since vehicles couldn't reach the area due to the level of destruction, when he felt that something big had happened that threw him to the ground. Al-Dahdoor said he tried to regain his strength to seek shelter as he anticipated another missile strike would follow. Realizing the severity of his bleeding arm, al-Dahdoor pressed it and opted to keep walking. He eventually spotted paramedics and signaled to them, but they were unable to reach him. The Al Jazeera correspondent walked until he got to them, received first aid, and was taken to hospital. I asked them to return to Samer Abu Dhaka, al-Dahdoor said, but the paramedic said that we had to leave immediately and send another vehicle to the location to avoid all of us becoming targets, and we arrived at the hospital. By the time he reached an ambulance, medical staff said they could not return to the site of the attack because it was too dangerous. Following Samer Abu Dhaka's injury, he was left to bleed to death for over 5 hours as the Israeli military prevented ambulances and rescue workers from reaching him, denying the much-needed emergency treatment. While al-Dahdoor told the network that one ambulance tried to reach Abu Dhaka, but the Israelis fired at it. The live broadcast showed Wael al-Dahdoor shortly after he arrived at the hospital. He urged medical staff and journalists around him to go back and rescue the cameraman, Samer Abu Dhaka. Samer was screaming, "Coordinate with the Red Cross, get someone to bring him." Wael al-Dahdoor displayed the same dignity and determination that he displayed when the Israeli military killed his wife, son, daughter and grandson in Nusayrat refugee camp in central Gaza Strip on 25th of October. This is a preliminary message despite the wounds, he said, from his hospital bed. I will try to regather myself and my strength to continue what we started from the beginning of the war, and despite everything, I expect to meet you tomorrow morning live on air. This was also not the first time that Wael al-Dahdoor had been injured by the Israeli military whilst reporting. He was struck in the arm by bullet shrapnel whilst covering Gaza's Great March of Return protests in May of 2018. Al Jazeera's managing editor, Muhammad Mu'awad, described Samer Abu Dhaka not just a skilled professional, but a compassionate soul who understood the power of visual storytelling. Muhammad Mu'awad said his lens captured the raw and unfiltered reality of life in the Gaza Strip, and his courage in the face of adversity allowed the world to witness the untold stories of the region. Friends and colleagues mourned Samer Abu Dhaka and remarked on his dedication to covering the Israeli regime's genocidal war on Gaza. Abu Dhaka had the opportunity to work in Belgium with Al Jazeera, but chose to live in the Gaza Strip and convinced his family to come back to Gaza as well, his colleague Tamer Al-Mashal recounted. The Committee to Protect Journalists called for an international probe into the attack, which it says was a result of a missile launched from what is believed to be an Israeli drone. Al Jazeera Network aired footage of Wael al-Dahdoor wearing his press vest and assured in its reporting that he was taking precautions and was identifiable as a member of the press. Last month, Palestinian reporter Hind Khoudari told the Electronic Intifada that she and others chose not to wear their press vests or carry press gear due to the fear of becoming targets when forcibly displaced from northern Gaza to the southern Gaza Strip. Al Jazeera said, It holds Israel accountable for the systematic targeting and killing of Al Jazeera journalists and members of their families. On Monday, an Israeli airstrike killed 90-year-old father of Al Jazeera reporter Anas al-Sharif. This came after al-Sharif had received threats from Israeli military officers by telephone. Israel's attacks on journalists also extend to the occupied West Bank. Israeli forces violently attacked Anadolu news agency photojournalist Mustafa al-Kharouf in occupied eastern Al-Quds recently whilst he was reporting there. Israeli police first pulled their weapons at al-Kharouf, who was covering the news, and then threw him to the ground, beating and kicking him whilst he was underground. The physical attack on Mustafa al-Kharouf is not a singular incident, CPJ program director Carlos Martinez de la Serna said. It belongs to a pattern of physical attacks, assaults and threats by Israeli soldiers and Israeli settlers on journalists reporting from the West Bank. CPJ says it has been able to confirm the deaths of at least 57 Palestinian and 3 Lebanese journalists. Israel's attacks on journalists also extend to assaults, threats, cyber attacks, censorship and killing of family members, according to CPJ. This is the deadliest month for journalists since CPJ began gathering data in 1992, according to the group.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamate is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism.
This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, Assalamu Alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, we're welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Farahzad. Stay tuned. An important point regarding Islamic teachings is that the Creator, namely Allah, will never leave His creatures alone. All the creatures of Allah are dear to Him, and the mercy of Allah encompasses all of His creatures. In other words, the power, mercy, and kindness of Allah reach all the creatures across the universe. By disrespecting the creatures of Allah, we are in fact disrespecting Allah and this is absolutely wrong.
خدا از مصنوعش جدا نیست و عاشق مصنوعشه، عاشق مخلوقشه و او رو
Allah is not separate from His creation. Allah loves His creatures and He nurtures them. This is why we must not criticize about Allah's creation or degrade Allah's creatures. Sometimes an unimportant word or expression will belittle or degrade someone up to an extent that he or she will be sad in soul. And saddening in soul, who is created by Allah, is verily saddening Allah. Therefore, we must be careful not to belittle or degrade anyone around us. Thank you very much, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Call of Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short speech by Hujjatul Islam Farhasad. To find out more about this program, log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. Now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
An-naqi means the pure, the immaculate, the clean. Al-hadi means the guide. All the imams came for guidance.
As-salamu alaykum ya ahla bayt al-nubuwa wa mawdi'a al-risala.
Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety.
This is Dialogue, an introduction into the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam. Imam Ali ibn Muhammad al-Hadi alayhi salam was this beautiful fountainhead of wisdom and knowledge. He had complete mastery over all of the Islamic sciences, but he was also a master upon the non-Islamic sciences. He was the honorable direct descendant of the Messenger of Allah, peace and blessings upon him. And His Eminence Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam was the 10th divinely appointed imam, the 10th divinely appointed successor, and the 10th divinely appointed trustee of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. During the imamah of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, the Abbasid Caliph Mutawakkil had the most bitter enmity against Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. And this was due to the special respect and honor that was given to Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Mutawakkil Abbasi imposed a severe house arrest upon the 10th divinely appointed imam. He monitored all his activities, he pinpointed his followers, and prevented legal dues from coming to Imam al-Hadi. He even tried his best to prevent scholars and narrators from associating with the divinely appointed imam. Unfortunately, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam suffered a lot during the reign of Mutawakkil Abbasi.
Parts of Ziyara text of Jamaatul Kabira issued by Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As-salamu ala a'immat al-huda wa masabih al-tuja wa a'lam al-tuqa wa dawilluha.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful. Peace be upon the directors of right guidance, the lanterns in darkness, the patterns of piety, the owners of understanding, the endued with thought, the havens of the peoples, the inheritors of the prophets, the perfect specimen, the most excellent call in the arguments of Allah against the inhabitants of the world, the hereafter and the former world. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon you all.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala mahal.
Peace be upon the exponents of the recognition of Allah, the centers of Allah's blessing, the essence of Allah's wisdom, the keepers of Allah's secrets, the bearers of Allah's book, the successor of Allah's Prophet, and the progeny of Allah's Messenger. May Allah send blessings upon him and his household. Allah's mercy and blessings too be upon them.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. As-salamu ala al-a'immat al-du'at.
Peace be upon the imams, the leaders, the guides, the chiefs, the authorities, the defenders, the protectors, the people of the reminder, the men in authority, the left ones by Allah, His select, His party, the case of His knowledge, His argument, His path, His light, His proof. Allah's mercy and blessings to be upon them.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's an honor to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So yes, dear friends, we are here talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. One of the things that was quite common and was something that was asked quite a bit from the divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam, was the issue of zakat. Now, zakat is this tax, Islamic tax, and it is one of the effective programs that Islam has established as a fundamental part of its economic system. Of course, it is one of the best means to pluck out the roots of poverty and wretchedness and economic disenfranchisement in society. And so, because it was such a fundamental part of Islam, we find that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam in many different conversations had to talk about these things and explain these things. It's interesting, one of the conversations that Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam has with one of his companions is whether or not an unbeliever can be given this zakat, they can be given this money from this Islamic tax. And so in reply to this question, in this conversation, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam says that, well, the question was specifically about those who believe in the embodiment of God, this tajassum, this idea that God has a body. And so in this sense, one who believes in the embodiment of God, of course, they are not considered to be believers. And so here they asked Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam whether it was permissible to give such an individual who believed in the embodiment of God from the zakat or not. And Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam replies that do not give whoever believes in embodiment from the zakat and do not offer prayer behind them. So even if this individual is quote-unquote somebody who is praying five times a day, but they believe in the embodiment of the Almighty Allah or the embodiment of God, one cannot offer prayers behind them. And not only that, but of course, that they are not allowed to be given from the zakat money. And in general, we find, according to the jurisprudential laws of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, that an unbeliever is also not supposed to be given from the zakat. There are certain categories which can be given the zakat money, and they are delineated in the fiqh and jurisprudence of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam. But again, the importance of giving zakat and the importance of not giving zakat to those who are undeserving of it. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Hadi alayhi salam. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Dialogue. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.ir/EN Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many other great programs as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.